Do you hear that little clicking in the background? What was that? Well, that was a shutter, a camera clicking off. We're going to be talking today about cameras. We'll be getting Jack Socha's opinions about cameras, camera options in 2019. If you're like me, you take a lot of your photos with your smartphone. I have an iPhone 6S, I think it is. It's not the latest and greatest version. There are some other versions that are better, even in the Apple, the iPhone era, and in some of the other smartphones as well. But Jack Socha has been with us many times over the year to talk about cameras. Do they still matter in 2019? Jack is a longtime how-to author of books and audio tutorials for new tech users, the author of the book, How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. And so we're going to be talking to him about the latest in camera trends. How do you take pictures these days? What are your photography questions? Love to hear from you. You can give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. Maybe you've got a great photo you want to email to us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Jack Socha with us by phone. Jack, thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Well, a belated Happy New Year. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, Happy New Year to you. Are most people like me? I pull out my iPhone, and I take a lot of photos with that iPhone.
That's exactly what has completely transformed the photo industry. I put a PDF kind of, I won't call it a white paper, it isn't that complicated, but I put this thing up on my website at acpress.com, just saying, it's 2019, do you know where photography is?
Yeah, well, where is it?
It's totally changed in the past couple of years. Anybody who hasn't been following it, or maybe somebody who bought a camera 5-6 years ago, you're going to go back into the store. You're not going to recognize anything anymore.
How does it look? How is it different in this camera store?
Well, what? For one thing, it seems like it's kind of separated. I'm thinking of like oil and vinegar. I was going to say you've got the cameras for the aficionados, and not a whole lot left, because the entire compact camera operation has given up the ghost to the iPhones or to the smartphones. They simply, you go into the stores anymore, and there's almost no cameras like you saw 5 or 6 years ago that were pocket-sized, and a couple of things have popped up to replace them. But again, we got all these niche markets now. We've got the bridge camera, which up till recently has been kind of spurred as being, you know, not that great a thing. They have come along real well, where all the pocket cameras that we were using, with the exception of a few Canon power shots, are just off the market these days.
Yeah. Well, there's people think there's probably, assume, and maybe rightfully so, that there's the iPhone or the smartphones take pretty good pictures, don't they, in your opinion?
Yes, they do. And the only danger is going to be that one of the reasons compact cameras kind of died off was they were getting too darn technical for people. You know,
yeah.
They were putting too much stuff in them. And already I'm starting to see feature creep, where they keep adding more features to smartphones. You know, I saw one floating around that was going to have four lenses on it. And I'm going, uh-oh, here we go again. People like to take, you know, not everybody wants to be an enthusiast, a person who wants to really get into photography. Just like we used to have Instamatics years ago, some people want to take just a decent picture and not worry about much else. And that's the market that keeps coming back.
You know, there can be a downside to it. I've taken thousands of pictures, I swear, with my iPhone over the years. And how many prints do I have of them? Not very many.
I know, and that is a serious, serious concern. I wrote an article about 10 years ago about that. What are you storing your photos on, and 20 years from now, what are you going to have? I was digging through some photos recently, and I found a 1966 black and white Polaroid taken with a camera back then called the Swinger.
Yeah, I remember the Swinger.
Yeah, well, that thing is 50-odd years old. It looks like it was taken yesterday. The only thing that has changed is me. it is just... On the other hand, I will say this. I went to a 60th anniversary for my wife's family in Madison, and I brought along a Fuji bridge camera called a Finepix S, and I did not realize it until I was actually reading the instructions. I was able to link it wirelessly without a router, just directly to my tablet and control it and see the picture. And so we could take a family group with this camera on the tripod, me in the group with the little tablet down kind of out of the way, and snap the pictures. And to me, that was pretty neat. It was kind of like a super selfie. So there are some good things about it, but the trouble is storage. You know, already we're starting to see new forms of plug-ins for USB sticks and this, that, and the other. And also several stores now, several chain stores, are quietly dropping their photo finishing labs.
Yeah.
Because of the lack of demand. And so we're seeing more and more online competition as the pieces of pie get smaller. It's crazy. There's a site out there, I think it's called Prints for Free, that you just pay shipping, and they'll print up to, I think, 85 prints at a time. Of course, they're hoping you're going to want to buy some 8x10s and 5x7s and things like that. But we are really getting into a screen-oriented society.
We really are, and that's okay. But I still, it's a lot of fun to go to this box that we've got in our family that is full of old pictures, photos, and just to be able to look at those. You know, you get a family gathering or whatever, and reminisce a little bit about how you looked back then and when it was taken and that sort of thing. And it doesn't seem like you get that much, that same feel with what we've got now.
Yeah, everything is much more current and almost disposable, it seems like. I guess the good side is that we can share them with so many people
yeah.
so quickly now, which we couldn't back in the old days. But I think what most people should do is they should look through their digital photos and sort out the ones that they really like, and then make an effort to go to some lab or online or whatever the case may be and have prints made and really do it, because sooner or later you're going to have a hard drive fail, or the cloud storage place that you trusted may not be there anymore, or some technical problem will happen. There's nothing like holding a print in your hand, and frankly, you won't get around to printing them at home. I mean, I had a fancy inkjet printer. I never used it.
Yeah.
And recently I got a color laser printer, and it does a pretty good picture, but not as good as the fancy inkjet did, and certainly not as good as you can get done at a lab.
Yeah.
So I would make it a nice winter project on these days when you're snowed in to sit back and just do some sorting out and put them on a USB stick and then take them someplace and get them printed.
Lee emailed to say, here's a different question for you. Lee emailed to say he would like to take a photo of a barn from the road and not trespass onto the property. Does he need the owner's permission to sell the images? And can he copyright this photo? So we're talking about a barn. He doesn't own it. But he's not going to trespass, but he is going to take a picture.
From what I'm not a lawyer on this one. Maybe a lawyer will call in. But from the last I remember, if you're standing on public property, a sidewalk, a street, and you're shooting into private property,
yeah.
In this particular case, I think you can get away with it. I frankly would be the smart thing to do would be to knock on the owner's door and say, do you mind if I take a picture of your barn? And maybe offer to give him a copy of the print.
Yeah, yeah. And he wondered about
human contact.
Yeah.
on there.
Kenny, can
but
you?
I know how that works. I mean, there are some derelict buildings I see out in the rural area. I take a picture of. I figure it doesn't matter. But again, it also depends whether there's people in the picture. You know, if somebody is out there sunbathing or something, you don't want to. You know, there's all kinds of intrusions going on, and who knows what's going to happen when you can fly over the property with a drone camera.
Yeah,
that's a whole new world.
Yeah, can you? You can copyright photos, can't you? Or can you?
You can. I mean, you can certainly. You took it. It's your property, and as long as you're not photographing a work of art to be reproduced as a work of art. I mean, if it's a picture hanging on the side of a building or something, that's a different story than going up and just copying the actual photo. It all depends whether you're standing on private property or whether you're in a public venue. It's a tricky area. It really is.
Yeah, it really is. Christine in Milwaukee has something for us. Hi, Christine.
Good morning.
Morning.
Yes, I have two question and a comment. My first question is, you were just speaking about storage, and I'm wondering, when you shoot with your digital camera, are you setting it for camera raw, or are you shooting JPEG files? And so hopefully you can address that. And then my comment has to do with when you were talking about how a lot of shops are closing up their printing areas. And I just had an experience at a drugstore where I was trying to get a black and white photo printed, and they don't seem to even understand what black and white is anymore. I sort of miss the old days when you could do it yourself in a dark room. But, you know, I'm pretty picky, and they gave me these files that had this bluish tint. I said, no, this isn't a black and white. This is all wrong. So it was frustrating to have to deal with people that didn't really understand the photo process and what I was looking for. So that was just my comment. And I'm going to actually just hang up and let you talk about the different formats to save files.
Yeah. So to answer the first part, for those of you who don't understand, a raw file bypasses all the internal processing of the camera, and then you use the software that came with it to really custom tweak it to make it look the way you want, where a JPEG is a compressed file that has gone through the processing of the camera and so is instantly viewable, more or less ready to go, although you can also tweak it. I've only been recently playing around with RAW files, and I do know that the people who are enthusiasts really love that. In terms of the long-term storage, I would also make either a JPEG or what they call a TIFF, a TIFF file, which is a non-compressible version. The idea being that we don't know what the software is going to be like 10 years from now, whether that particular raw file can still be accessed. Most likely it can, but you never can tell.
Yeah.
If you have a JPEG or a TIFF, you, generally speaking, got something that can be accessed by whatever is coming down the pike.
Yeah, absolutely. Jack, thank you for being with us today, and he's going to be with us right up until 12:30. We'll take a look at the news, and then we'll be back to talk more photography with Zach Socha. Stay with us. There you go, the camera shutter, taking photos today with our guest, Jack Socha. I'm Larry Mueller, by the way. We'll take a look at camera options for 2019. We'll talk about composing pictures. We'll talk about the hardware and the iPhone and smartphones as cameras with our guest, Jack Socha. He is a longtime been a guest on our program. He is the author of books and audio tutorials for new tech users. He's the author of the book, How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. So how do you take photos these days? What would you like to know about taking a better photo? Give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. You know, we had Christine on just before our break, Jack, and she was talking about taking wanting to get a black and white photo developed, and the people didn't know what she was talking about, where she went.
I was thinking about that during the break, that, you know, they can make a pure black and white photo. What's going on is they don't know how to turn down all the colors for the color printer. And so what you almost have to do to show them is bring in a black and white photo and show them this is what it's supposed to look like. It's just a question of the operator, because I've had the same exact problem at a drugstore. And one place, when the guy is working there who really knows the system, he knows how to set it properly. Another person did not know, and that was the big difference. And it's very hard to do with a color printer, even in your home as well. So, but it can be done. There also, of course, are, you know, specialty labs that you can go online, and they print black and white only. And they do work with digital files, so you may have to do that if you can't get satisfaction from your local lab.
So you can join in too, by the way, with your questions as we move along today at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. And Jack, you can't see this. We had Betsy emailed a photo she took from her iPhone, and it's a monarch butterfly on a flower, and it's fairly close up, and it's a great photo.
Yep. A friend of mine just came back from Europe, and that's the only thing he took with him. People just don't want to carry more than one thing. And again, the lenses have gotten extremely good, and the resolution is working its way up. It's not nearly as high a resolution as many cameras are now. I regularly have 16 and 20 megapixel cameras, and you know, they're getting even higher than that. What's really amusing is the zoom range. I thought I was pretty sharp with this Fuji that's got a 50x zoom, and I've even got a couple of smaller ones with 30x zooms, which, you know, 50x goes out to like 500 some millimeter. If you happen to have $999 you wish to spend for a Sony bridge camera, they are coming out with one that goes from 24 millimeter wide angle to 3,000 millimeter telephoto. Now, and with image stabilization built in, you may actually be able to hold the camera.
I was just thinking that. How do you hold the camera to take a picture?
Well, this is the thing that's going on. It's kind of interesting. Years ago, when film cameras were so-called bridge cameras, they didn't get a lot of respect in the camera stores. Part of it was that they thought the image quality couldn't possibly be good in a wide range. And the second thing is, quite frankly, from a practical point of view, once they sell you a bridge camera with a big zoom lens permanently attached, they don't have much else to sell you.
Yeah.
You know? But what's happened is these digital cameras now, there are aberrations that are in that long a lens, that, you know, their compromises are made. But they build in algorithms, programs into the camera that correct for barrel distortion or pincushion distortion or all the other flaws that could pop up. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I also noticed, for those who are using interchangeable lenses, if you thought it was confusing now, a lot of these newest high-tech lenses that are interchangeable now come with the ability to have their own firmware upgrades. You could upgrade the firmware of the lens.
Oh.
It was bad enough. I mean, people were terrified of upgrading the firmware of the camera because they thought they could brick it, which is possible. You know, when you've got to have a firmware upgrade for a lens, you know things have gotten complicated.
Janet in Heartland has something for us. I think that relates to what you were talking about here a few minutes ago. Janet, hi.
Hello, good morning. This is, or I should say good afternoon. This is a perfect question for you. I have gotten into definitely relying on my phone for photos. I've got a Canon PowerShot and some other cameras. But for a trip to England, what would be a suggestion for a pocket-sized camera that I could take duplicate photos so I have them both ways?
If your Canon power shots are small enough, I would take one of those. I'm a big fan of Canon power shots. I have one that is a couple years old now. It's called an SX500. is pretty small, and it's got a 30x zoom, and it's got all kinds of image stabilization, and it's even got a post-processing thing for underexposed photos right in the camera. There are new power shots coming out all the time, and if you can find a small enough one, they are really good.
Okay, because, I've got to have something that I'm not fumbling with.
Well, again, I would lean in that direction. I have seen also, one nice thing is some of these cameras, once again, are using AA batteries. Nikon had a very simple 20-megapixel point-and-shoot that was quite small that ran on two AA batteries, which means if you're out there someplace on the Thames and you need batteries, you can probably buy them. And I was seeing those things being closed out for $30.
Oh!
I mean, yeah, well, this is what's going on. The compact cameras are falling by the wayside, and you can find some pretty good bargains for them. Now, that particular camera did something they should have done years ago. They took away all the features. I mean, it was basically just programmed and did a good job.
Yeah, made it simple.
So I would consider either a power shot or I've seen some, if you don't mind getting one that's a little older one, if you can find one, I've seen some 12 and 16 megapixel ones that were really pocket size, and some of them even still had an optical viewer built into them.
Yeah, there you go, Janet. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Mary in Madison, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Oh, I think you can help me, I'm hoping. I guess I'm an aficionado or a would-be one. I have a Canon EOS and with interchangeable lenses, and I'm in my period of post-retirement traveling now, so I bought a honkin' big 600-millimeter lens and got pictures. Well, anyway, I'm going on a safari in Africa, and I got to figure out what to do because my camera base is not... When I put on the mid-size lens, the 200-millimeter, and the regular lens, it's not working. But I take it to the camera shop, and they say everything works. But the long lens works, you know, with the autofocus and everything. I don't know if that's a firmware problem. I don't know if my lens is worn out because I've had these camera, you know, the connection. And so I'm wondering I should get a new camera or what.
Well, the first thing I would do, you have to do a kind of an empirical thing here. You find somebody you know who has another Canon SLR, or if you go into a camera store and they've got one that you can take a look at, you want to put the lens on the another body and see if it doesn't work properly. And then this way, or another lens that a neighbor has on your camera body, and just you got to figure out where the problem lies. Now, which is the lens that was apparently not working properly?
Well, on the last trip, it's actually the regular 35-millimeter lens that wasn't working. So I could use the long lenses, and it worked, but the regular one didn't. Luckily, I take three cameras, so I had a backup. But
there you go. That's a good choice. It did not focus properly, or what was the problem with it?
Yeah, it wouldn't focus. It really wouldn't. It wouldn't even manually focus. I mean, it just wouldn't. It connected. It popped in place, you know. With the bayonet mount, but it didn't do anything. It wouldn't work at all.
Yeah. I would probably see if you have someone you know who has another similar Canon camera, put that lens on another body and see if it acts up.
Yeah.
And that really is about the only thing you can do.
Okay, and then...
At least it's not your 600-millimeter that's broken. That would be a real crime.
Yeah, no kidding. So at this point, I'm wondering if I should... try to get one of those fancy new cameras that does it all and not take my great big lens that I spent too much for.
This is what's going on. I mean, it is getting kind of crazy, and I would think that for a lot of real low-light shooting, you may still want to use your Canon, but I'm not pushing bridge cameras. I own no stock in these companies, but it is amazing that you can get a bridge camera that will run on penlight batteries, which is convenient for travel, and has all the functions of an SLR, and is a little bit smaller, and also has an extremely high frame rate because there's no mirror to flip up and down. Now, the only difference is that they would have an electronic viewfinder, which will probably not be quite as clear to you after using an optical one. But you might want to give one a try.
Yeah, it'd be worth taking a look at, Mary. Thanks very much for calling, and good luck on your trip.
Thanks.
All right, appreciate it. Richard in Madison, you're next. Hi, Richard.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, first I wanted to respond to the caller who was just on the phone. I was in Africa about 3 years ago, and I did take a bridge camera, a Canon SX60HS, that took phenomenal pictures. You can't blow them up to poster size, you know, because of the resolution, but it was amazing because you could zoom in and out on animals really quickly, which you can't really do with a long lens. So I was very happy with that. But what I was calling about is the differences between the SX60HS, and I've been looking at a Sony CyberShot RX10 IV, which has a larger image sensor, although the focal range or the lens range is not as great as the SX60, and I was just wondering what your opinion of the RX10 IV is compared to the SX60.
Generally speaking, and I don't have either of those cameras, but I do have one Fuji that has a larger sensor, and there is a difference in the quality of the pictures. There is a big push now among people who are using mirrorless cameras or, in some cases, regular former SLRs to go what they call full frame. That's getting a little bit excessive, but I think that if you have the larger sensor, you're going to have a higher resolution image, and you may be able to crop it a little bit and get pretty much the same aspect ratio as you would have with the longer lens of the other camera. But, I'm the sensor wars are really crazy, and a lot depends on how big a picture you're planning on printing, or if you are planning on printing, for that matter. But I did notice that I have a Fuji, I think it's called an X10. It looks kind of mimics a Leica rangefinder, but doesn't have removable lenses. And whenever I use it, I do notice that the pictures are just a bit better than the other, the so-called APS-C size sensors. So I would maybe lean that direction.
Well, there you go, Richard. Thank you very much for calling. Let's go to Paul in Menominee. Hi, Paul.
Hi. I repair classic cameras, 50 to 100 years old, and I'm amazed at the number of young people who have been raised on digital that have developed interest in black and white, especially film processes. And it seems to be a trend because you can do lots of different kinds of things with film. And also the resolution available is fabulous compared to digital for certain types of photography.
Well, you know, I'm with you 100%. I talk about a little bit of nostalgia. I went into a thrift store and found what I consider to be the classic beginner 1975 camera outfit for $20. I mean, it was a Mamiya SLR, a 35 millimeter lens, a 50, and a 135 in a big square carry case, and that was that brought back tears to my eyes to see all that going on. It's amazing how simple cameras were at one point, where you had a meter, a shutter speed, an f-stop, and you dialed up the ASA. And once you learn the relation, you're ready to go. And so there is a certain simplicity to that, and I think that, like a lot of other things, what goes around comes around, and people suddenly discover that, hey, these are kind of cool. So there are some mechanical cameras still out there that work, as you say, you're repairing them, which is a good deal. And there's also a whole market now in the Kickstarter programs to try to bring back classic lens designs from many, many years ago. Some of those are doing well, and some of them are not doing so well. But keep those cameras going.
Hey, Paul, thank you. So you're really busy.
I get cameras from Switzerland and Japan and all over the world. But the people that were able to repair them or knew about them have died.
Paul,
I've got my dad's old black Pentax. I'd like to get repaired. I may have to get hold of you.
Yeah, Paul, I'm going to get all kinds of emails from people saying, "Well, what was the name of the guy's company or what was his business name?" So you have to give it to us, Paul.
Okay, it's Paul Ebel, Lens Services, and the mailing address is P.O. Box 141, Menominee, Wisconsin, 54751.
All right. And again, it's Paul Ebel?
Yeah, right.
E-B-E-L. E-B-E-L.
Right.
Okay. Thank you, Paul. I'm glad I'm glad you're still in business, and I'm glad things are doing well for you. Appreciate the call. Lois in DeForest, it's your turn. Hi, Lois.
Hi, Larry and guest. I wanted to share an experience I had. I developed a photo I took of a monarch on a zinnia plant, and the camera store was able to, with my photo taken by a 5S iPhone, able to, I can see the proboscis of the monarch nectaring on the zinnia.
Wow.
Now, I am also, I think, checking to buy a real camera, I think, but I did want to at least just share that. I think, you know, I was somewhat happy with that photo.
And where was it? Where did you have it developed?
At the camera store on the east side by Easttown.
Oh, the camera store at Madison. Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
Lois,
well, you're lucky to have a camera store. That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's wonderful. It's good to hear that you've got that kind of quality in the final product. Thank you.
Well, you know, Larry, there's a couple of drugstores, a chain drugstore in La Crosse, near where I live, and they have two different machines. One is a bit older than the other one, and we've discovered that prints made at the one store are better than at the other. So that is another thing that goes on there. Sometimes they invest a bunch of money into a really expensive machine. Other times they get a little lesser expensive machine. And there may be maintenance things, too, that have got to deal with as well. But, yeah, you should be able to get good quality prints from some of these. You know, these are $250,000 processors. You'd think they should work properly.
Yeah, you'd think. Dennis in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Dennis.
Good morning. The one thing I wanted to mention is the storage of photos. I've been scanning my personal photos for the last 10 years, and it's those of my family. It turns out I've got probably 100,000 photos digitally. I just wanted to mention the cloud service storage of photos. Basically, it's insecure. When you store your photos on Amazon or Google or Shutterfly, you basically give up rights to those photos. And those companies, including Facebook, are selling the photos for name recognition. Number two, you have so many photos, it ends up being a cost, and you're perpetually renting space. And number three, you have you've lost control of those photos. If someone you want to show the photos has an internet service, they can see the photos, but it's not like having the photos locally on your local PC.
Yeah. Comment on that, Jack?
I agree. The only advantage is, number one, you don't put all your eggs in one basket. I mean, I've got photos stored on a little 2 terabyte external USB hard drive. And some of my photos I have uploaded to a cloud service, but the idea is that you want to have them in different places so that if, you know, heaven forbid there be a fire or something, your stuff isn't all destroyed and you can't ever get it back. But, there's a question about, you know, if you take some incredible news photo or something that is so spectacular that has a great deal of intrinsic value, there is a possibility that people will try to find some way of monetizing it without your permission. And there's a lot of fine print in those cloud sharing services. Who knew that checking your DNA also is sold to the pharmacy industries for getting data about the various ethnic persuasions and what their problems are. It's the same thing. If they're selling all these photos to rent out for facial recognition for some future project to make some software better without telling you, it's a concern. We're all concerned about privacy, but at the same time, you're really up against it. Most people are not going to take the time to really index and store their photos properly.
Yeah.
That's a real problem.
It is a real problem. And on that problematic note, we're out of time, Jack.
Oh, no.
Thanks so much. You'll come back and be with us again, I hope.
Will do, anytime.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. Jack Socha with us today. He's the author of the book, How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. He's a longtime how-to author. He does audio tutorials for new tech users as well. Go to Jack Socha. If you type in S-O-C-H-A is his last name spelling, S-O-C-H-A, you're going to find out, you'll get to his site and find out a whole lot more about Jack and what he's got going for him. And just to look ahead, tomorrow on Garden Talk, David Wanninger, the horticulturist in charge at the Berner Botanical Gardens in Milwaukee County, joins us. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network.